ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। महीं निर्विरुधं कर्तां संवर्धाक इवात्यये। माय डियर किंग, at the time of devastation, Lord Shiva emits fire and air from his mouth out of anger to make the surface of the earth completely treeless. The Prachetas also emitted fire and air from their mouths. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In this verse, Vidura is addressed as Rajan, which means, O King. In this regard, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that a dhira never becomes angry because he is always situated in devotional service. Advanced devotees can control their senses. Therefore, a devotee can be addressed as Rajan. A king controls and rules in various ways amongst citizens. Similarly, one who can control his senses is the king of his senses. He is a Swami or Goswami. These Swamis and Goswamis are therefore sometimes addressed as Maharaj or King. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 30, entitled The Activities of the Prachetas, text number 45. The Prachetas, who are the 10 sons of King Prachinibarhishat, entered deep into the wilderness on the order of their father to gain control of their mind and senses, purify their hearts, and receive the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the only real purpose of existence. Human life is meant specifically for self-realization. If the leaders of society on all levels do not exhibit this example, it will be very difficult for anyone else to do so. Because Maya is so strong, this illusory energy is so bewildering and entangling. Material nature will provide unlimited reasons to pursue a life of material enjoyment. The entire atmosphere is very much surcharged with an energy that will instigate and stimulate the false ego, lust, envy, anger, pride, illusion, greed.
The example is given that the three modes of material nature are like the strings that Mayadevi uses to move the conditioned souls according to her sweet will, like her puppets. A puppet will dance according to the dictation of the puppeteer. Material world is a place where everyone is dancing to the song of Mayadevi, on the strings of Mayadevi. But they do not know it, because these strings are invisible to the eyes. They cannot be seen. So we think we're free. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha akankara vimutatma kartaham iti manyate. The bewildered soul thinks him or herself to be the doer of activities, when actually they're simply being carried out by nature. And how they're being carried out by nature, Prabhupada gives this very simple analogy of a puppet moving about by the pulling of the strings of the puppeteer. So Mayadevi, through the modes of material nature, is causing us to dance in so many ways. And yet we think that we are the doer. And we are proud of what we have done. And through this process, we become endlessly entangled in the network of material complexities and perplexities. So how to be free from this influence? Daivi he shukuna mayi mama maya duratyaya mam evam ye prapadyante maya meta tarantite. Krishna tells, Krishna knows, maya tyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacha. Krishna says this material nature is working under my direction. That means he is the only authority who knows how we can become free from the bondage of material nature. Everyone can give their speculative opinions and their rational explanations according to science, logic, philosophy, sociology, mathematics, biology, astrology, astronomy, chemistry. So many ways we can explain how to find happiness and be free of suffering. But Krishna tells, this material nature is my energy, and it is at all times working under my control. Material nature never comes out of the control of Krishna. Yes. Human beings are fallible and limited. We're little jivatmas. We could create machines, but then machines could come out of the control of the so-called controller, because we're not controllers. Ultimately, we are all little Ishwaras, or Ishwaris. Little tiny Ishwaras and Ishwaris. And we're trying to control. Because we're part and parcel of Krishna, we have that propensity and we have that power, infinitesimally. But because we're infinitesimal Ishwaras and Ishwaris, or controllers, that means nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yo vedadati kaman, that we are always, at all times, there is never a moment in all eternity that we are not being controlled. Controlled by who? Ishvara Parama Krishna, the supreme controller of all controllers. And we are controlled either by his material energy or spiritual energy, depending on how we approach the Lord. If we approach the Lord with envy, which means wanting to be an independent enjoyer and proprietor over anything, then to that extent we will be controlled by Maya Devi, by the strings of the three modes of material nature. Like her puppet, we dance. But when we surrender, but Krishna is here and explaining that if one surrenders to me, only then one can cross beyond the influence of the three modes of material nature and be free from the clutches of illusion. There's no other way. Because this energy is a divine energy. It is all powerful. And only the superior power of Krishna can free us from his own inferior energy. When we surrender to Krishna, then we become subordinate to the Swarup Shakti, to the power of God's intimate love. In the science of bhakti, or love, we find how a devotee is controlled by the love, by the mercy, by the beauty of God. But one who does not choose that way is controlled by one's own fastidious, selfish ego and passions. Kama esha, krodha esha, rajoguna, shamad baba, mahashano, mahapapma, vidye nami avairanam. Krishna tells in Gita, it is lust only, Arjuna. That desire to enjoy. And there are various levels of lust. There's the gross level of lust, which is just desire to rub objects against our knowledge acquiring and working senses to try to get some experience of happiness. Yes. The knowledge acquiring senses, the eyes, are always eager to come and communicate, to come in contact with sight that will give pleasure. The ears, longing for sound, the nose for smell, the skin for touch, the tongue for taste. Isn't it ridiculous? The eternal spirit soul, which is a spark of God, the Supreme, which is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss, is completely covered over by just the infatuation and the absolute desperation just for that that rubbing of sense objects to the senses. Just to see something or to hear something or to taste something or to smell something or to touch something. Yehi samsparja chagbhoga dukha jonayevate. And what are these pleasures? How long do they last? Only as long as the contact is between the senses and their object does it last. You see something, you'll long and pray and strive to see something, and then you'll see it. And after a few seconds or a few minutes, it's gone. You'll taste something. But how long does that taste remain on the surface of your tongue? It comes and it goes, it comes and it goes. And yet birth after birth after birth after birth, we are neglecting the opportunity for divine love of God, eternal ecstatic service to the Supreme, because Maya just keeps promising us, you know, just one more little insignificant temporary pleasure of rubbing the objects on their senses. Yes, that's what material life is about. It's really stupid. It's foolish. But this is the power of Maya. Maya bewilders us in such a dream state that we take this whole process so seriously, that we're willing to work like asses, foaming at the mouth, just to get facilities to rub objects against the senses. We're willing to turn against our own godbrothers, godsisters, mother, father, brother, sister. We're willing to declare wars. We're willing to kill and murder and cheat and lie and get karmically bound by so many sinful reactions just for that rubbing of sight against the eyes, a rubbing of sound against the eardrums, a rubbing of scent against the nose, a rubbing of taste against the tongue, a rubbing of touch against the flesh. It's no big deal. It's really no big deal. Just like, you know, you rub something against this marble, there's really no difference. What is the body? It's just dead matter. Yes? The body's just dead matter. And the objects of the senses is just dead matter. And all you're doing is rubbing. You know, different types of rubbing according to the sense. I mean, go up to a corpse and rub it. Right? Put nice smells near it. It's the smell is factually contacting the sense of smelling. Yes? Put a gulabjaman in the mouth of a dead corpse. And the fact is that that sweetness is rubbing against the tongue. But what is it? It's just dead matter against dead matter. It's not such a great thing. That why people are so infatuated. They write literatures about it. They spend hundreds of millions of dollars to make movies about it. They have entire industrial complexes of, and technological scientific explosions of progress just to facilitate it. But really, what is it? Nayam deho deha bhajam naloke kastan kaman arhati vidbhujam jay. It's the same old thing, the dogs and the hogs and the snakes and the turtles and the birds. It's the same thing they're looking for. Just that rubbing of the objects against the senses. And we make such a gigantic issue about these things. Why? Because Maya is so strong. Because the soul, the spirit soul, the eternal soul is anandamayobhyasha, needs to enjoy. It's its nature to enjoy. It must find some enjoyment. And what is its natural enjoyment? The enjoyment of offering its eternal love to Krishna. And experiencing the reciprocation of Krishna's love. How we read in the scriptures, when Krishna glances, what it does to the devotees. That little gopi, just by Krishna's glance, she just absolutely blossomed with prema, with ecstasies of love. Just a glance of Krishna can stimulate eternal, supreme pleasure from the heart. But that is pleasure that is directly stimulated within the soul, of our true self. So that is real sense gratification. The sense gratification of this world, it's really an exaggeration calling it sense gratification. The experiences don't even deserve that title. real sense gratification is the spiritual senses, because the spiritual senses are real. When Krishna gives the betel nut he chews to his devotee, oh, when you taste that, then he will. It just, it stimulates, it awakens ecstasies that just absolutely please the very essence of our being, the soul. When Krishna plays his flute, Lord Chaitanya explained that it's like a bird that goes into the ears of gopis and makes a nest in the ear, and nothing else can enter in. Just completely captures, it goes right into the heart through the ears and captures the heart. And everything else within the entire universal creation becomes irrelevant. Krishna sound. So yes, real sense gratification is of the soul in relation to the supreme, all-beautiful object of all senses, Krishna. So therefore, we have to have that. And in ignorance of that reality, we stoop so pitifully low to try to find a substitute of that pleasure by just rubbing objects against this dead matter called our senses. And because somehow or other the soul is experiencing through that, it's trying to find pleasure through just this rubbing of matter against matter. Hare Krishna. And we make such a big deal out of the whole thing. But Maya is so strong. Therefore, unless leaders of society show by their example that there is a higher truth to pursue in life, then how possibly will common people ever overcome the temptations and infatuations and disappointments of the illusory energy? Tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam. Human life is meant for tapasya. Therefore, King Prachini Barhishat told his sons, go, perform tapasya. He didn't send them to Harvard Business School. He didn't send them to Yale University to learn international politics. He sent them to the wilderness to learn how to control their mind and senses. Subtle sense gratification is more incriminating and more powerful than gross sense gratification. Subtle sense gratification, adoration and distinction. We want to be the controller. We want to be the proprietor. We want to be the benefactor. We want credit. We want glorification. This is the false ego. Very difficult to overcome. In this way, these invisible strings of Maya are not only making us dance to her gross temptations, but even more so, she has these subtle strings just making our subtle body dance according to her song. Yes. Krishna is the supreme controller. To actually accept that fact, you have to become completely humble. If Krishna is the supreme controller, then in no way, in no form, in no shape, am I the controller of anything. Yes? Otherwise, how is Krishna the supreme controller? Yet we're told to control our senses. But what does that mean? Daivyeshu gunamami maya mama maya yatratyaya mami vamya prapadyante maya metatarantite. The only true control of our senses is to surrender our senses to Krishna. Krishna tells in Gita, just surrender, I will preserve what you have and I will carry what you lack. So yes, we want to be controller and proprietor of things and of people. Yes? Just like a father is thinking, I am the controller of my children. But in the age of Kali, good luck with that. No matter what you do, the children do something else. Yes? You're just not the controller. Everyone has their independence. We want people under our control. What is that born from? From this fastidious disease of wanting to be the controller and the proprietor. It's false ego. Everything belongs to Krishna. We're just instruments. A devotee understands janasya mohoya mahama meti, that no, I'm not this body and nothing is mine. Everything belongs to Krishna. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvalokamaheshwaram suhridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shantimirjjati. Krishna says the only true peace is when you understand I'm the supreme enjoyer, I'm the supreme proprietor, and I'm the well-wisher of everyone. So we want to present ourselves as well-wishers because we are speaking Srimad Bhagavatam so nicely. And because we are attracting the shelter of people in this world, whether it be our family members or our disciples or our counselees or our students we're preaching to or whatever, we think I am well-wisher. This is Maya. It's nonsense. You're not a well-wisher. Krishna's the well-wisher. Krishna says he is the well-wisher. If you want to actually achieve peace, you just have to be honest. Krishna is the supreme benefactor and well-wisher of all living beings. What does it mean to be a preacher? What does it mean to be a devotee? It simply means to be an instrument of Krishna. Not try to control, not try to possess, no desire for prestige or any of that boar stool. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave this example, that the prestige in this world, which everybody is so hungry for, is nothing more than the stool of a boar. It's quite... Now, can you think of any type of stool more abominable than a boar? You know, dog stool is a much higher quality. Rabbit stool. Human stool. Huh? You all know what it's like. You just flush it right down. Yeah? Who's attached to their stool? Nobody. Your mouth does not water every time you go into the latrine. I'm sorry about that. It's abominable. You know, the human civilization, part of human civilization today is how quickly and effortlessly you can just get rid of it. You can just make it disappear and just nobody even knows it ever existed. You know, it's just flowing underground through modern computerized plumbing technology. But the worst stool is hog stool, because hogs eat stool. Yes, so what is a hog stool? Hog stool means, recycled stool. Stool that's recycled. The stool of stool. And then there's the civilized hogs and the uncivilized hogs. The civilized hogs are the hogs. And the uncivilized hogs are the boars. They're like the adivas of, amongst the hog community. They live in the jungles, right? Even the hogs will never marry their daughter to a boar. Why is that? They're very low. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur took the most abominable possible extreme of material nature, the bore of a stool, to compare it to false prestige. Yes? That we want to be honored, we want to be respected. We want people to follow us and to give us that dignity. It's hog stool. No, boar stool. But yet, people are willing to fight against their own loved ones and relatives just to taste that boar stool, accumulate as much as possible. People are willing to create the disintegration and the corruption of pure spiritual movements, break people's hearts, break people's lives, because they're so obsessed with tasting that boar stool. Very difficult. These are the power of those subtle strings of the material nature that Maya Devi has on all of us. So unless there are examples in this world of people who are willing and ready to actually live a life in which they can take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, through the process of engaging our senses and our mind in His loving service under proper direction from spiritual masters, there's no hope for anyone to be free from this slavery. Thus the Prachetas went to the forest, very sincerely and very cooperatively. And we find that they met great saints, Vaishnavas, ultimately Lord Shiva, who gave them mantras to chant and prayers to recite in order to purify their hearts and invoke the compassion of Lord Vishnu. And because of their humility, their unity, their sincerity, in chanting that mantra, Lord Vishnu appeared before them. And they offered beautiful prayers. And the essence of their prayers was really, they only wanted one benediction from the Lord: the association of devotees in the spirit of the servant of the servant of the servant. Unmotivated, unconditional desire to serve in the association of devotees. That's all they wanted. They consider themselves unfit to ask for anything beyond that. And Lord Vishnu granted them the perfection of life and told them that they should, their father, King Prachini Barhishat, while they were away doing all this tapasya, Narada Muni preached to him and convinced him to renounce his kingdom and enter into the forest and practice pure devotional service. Haribo. So little did the Prachetas know, but their father was already a Vanaprastha in the forest. He was gone. He just got rid of all that mundane entanglement. Isn't that amazing? That in Vedic civilization, a person who has everything is actually waiting for the day when he or she could be detached from it all and just walk away. And material consciousness is just to hold on to it somehow or other by hook or by crook until our last breath. Hare Krishna. And then, even before the last breath, we make a will so that under the illusion of the bodily concept, our expansions, who we will live through in this world, our children, they will enjoy it all. Haribo. The King Prachani Parishat is left. It's like an emergency landing. Narada Muni made the announcement and he just left everything. And so because the kingdom was without any organization, management, or direction, the world became chaos. Management is important. That famous incident where Prabhupada is in Vrindavan, his last days in the world, and Giriraj Swami Maharaj was one of Prabhupada's very most trusted leaders. Prabhupada really saw in Giriraj Swami Maharaj a person he completely trusted, his integrity, his sincerity, and his devotion. So he gave so many very beautiful and important instructions. So Prabhupada asked Giriraj Swami, "Do you know what will keep our movement strong and prosperous?" And Giriraj Maharaj said, "Yes, you know, purity of consciousness and all of that. It's becoming very pure." And Prabhupada said, "No. Good management, proper organization." Because it's understood that purity of consciousness and by chanting Hare Krishna and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and developing a taste for hearing and chanting, he's already said that in all of his books, practically every sentence of every purport, he's leading us to that, developing a taste for hearing and chanting and surrendering and everything. But as an organization, in order to facilitate devotees to do that and to keep doing that, cultivating a desire for hearing and chanting and devotional service, there has to be organization. It's very real. Without organization, people become lost. And when people become lost, and they don't have proper facility of direction, then, you know, how many people are going to be, you know, babajis, sleeping under a tree, chanting 3 lakhs every day? Not so many. If we want a society which will actually enthuse and protect the spiritual aspirations of a quantity of devotees, there must be good organization and management. And here is an example. This is not Kali Yuga, this is a previous age that this is taking place. And King Prachini Barhishat, he left the kingdom But he did so with the blessings of Narada Muni, so it was a good thing. But what happened after he left? There was no organization, there was no management on the whole planet. So the trees just took advantage of the situation and covered the entire earth.
Hare Krishna.
Now that may sound like a very ideal, heavenly arrangement, just trees. And each of these trees were so high and so big that they were practically blocking the earth from any connection with the heavenly planets or even the sky. One couldn't even see the sky anywhere. They were just trees. And in this way, no food could grow. Obviously, they were not fruit trees. Because it says in the Bhagavatam, there was no food on the planet for any humans. There was no agricultural fields. There was no pastures for the cows to eat and provide milk. There was no grains, and no fruits, and no vegetables. So the Prachetas, they come out of the water. They were underwater for thousands of years performing tapasya. It was underwater that they saw Lord Vishnu. Now that's tapasya. How long can you stay underwater? Hare Krishna. Before you become blue and then purple and then you just die. But the Prachetas, they had such powers, they could remain underwater. Why underwater? Because it's a very quiet place to meditate. There's no quieter place. Nobody bothers you there. So when they came out from the water, after the darshan of the Lord, they understood, this is their duty, this is their mission to the Lord. Now they were completely detached from materialistic consciousness. They were enlightened souls. They had the darshan of the Lord. The benediction of pure love of God, pure devotional service was already granted to them. But they had a duty to perform. Because what's the use of love if you don't serve the will of the object of your love? We show our love by our desire to serve. Arjuna showed his love for Krishna by fighting a battle. Arjuna did not want to do that. He wanted to leave. But Krishna said, you love me, you fight. This is what I want. Love is not just a sentiment. Love is real and dynamic. If we want to love someone, we must understand who that person is and what they want of us. Otherwise, there's no possibility of showing love. It's imaginative. So they had some love for Vishnu. And Vishnu told them to rule over the world on behalf of their father. So they came out and they felt responsibility. That the whole world is starving. There's no food growing anywhere because these gigantic trees had just usurped the earth. So they felt a very, very deep sense of responsibility in the spirit of their service. So it appeared that they became angry. Yes? But this was not an egoistic anger. Because they didn't care. If they could live underwater, they could certainly live amongst trees. But what about the rest of the world? It wasn't a selfish anger. It was anger used in the service of the Lord. This is a very, very sensitive subject matter that has to be understood very carefully. Some people, they think that if a saintly person becomes angry, they're not saintly at all. But we find Yashoda Mai would be angry with Krishna. So would Nanda Maharaj. Does that mean that they were not saintly? Krishna incited Arjuna to anger, to fight. Does that mean? And who is more angry than Hanuman? If you read Mahabharata, when he was fighting against those Rakshasas, Ravana's people, he was angry. Angry at Kumbhakarna, angry at Ravana. When he went to that Ashoka Grove, he wasn't just very sweet and polite when he burned down the whole Ashoka Grove and just started screaming out, "Ravana, you will wait till Ram comes." He burned the whole city of Lanka. Yes, he was pretty angry because he saw the condition of Sita Devi. He didn't like it. His anger was in the service of the Lord, and the Lord was very, very... When Hanuman came back from Sri Lanka after destroying the Ashoka Grove, the favorite garden of Ravana. Yes, just like we have our garden back here now. And it's everyone's favorite garden. If anyone plucks a leaf unnecessarily from that garden, then devotees will become angry upon you. Well, here, Ravana's favorite garden. Hanuman just didn't pick a leaf. He just pulled out from the roots every plant in that entire garden. It was finished. And then, just to show his anger even more, he burned down the vast quantity of the whole city of Sri Lanka. And then he jumped back and cried out, "Ravana, if you think, just wait, I'm just the insignificant servant of Ram, and this is what I have done. Wait until Ram himself comes. See what will happen." Hare Krishna. And he went back to Ramchandra in Kishkindha Kshetra, at the Malyavanta cave. And he met Ram there, and he told Sri Ramchandra exactly what he did, and Ram embraced him with love, and they both wept tears of love upon each other. It's service. So the Prachetas, they came out of the sea, and their service to the Lord told them to rule over the world, and that means every living being in the world is your praja. You must protect. And part of protecting for a Kshatriya is you must punish those who are unnecessarily, illegally usurping the rights of others. Yes? Kshatriyas must have compassion, but they must also administer justice to protect the laws of God. Otherwise, rogues and thieves will take advantage of sentimental forgiveness and compassion and create horrible pain upon the innocent. This is material world, jiva jiva sajivanam, that one living being is food for another. And this is especially true in human society. We may not literally eat them with our mouths, but we certainly do with our egos. Yes. What is... People get power. Criminals get power. Mafias get powers. Governments get powers. Dictators get powers. And along with power comes the responsibility to protect the innocent. But when we exploit the innocent for our own envious, lusty, greedy purposes, that's a crime. And it's the first and foremost duty of the rulers to protect the innocent from these demonic elements, which are always there in this world. Madhu and Kaitava, they were trying to exploit Brahma even before anything else was created. It's the nature of this world. There's envious people, and they want to fulfill their ways by usurping from the innocent, by controlling and exploiting the innocent. Anything for their own means. It's not just in the scriptures thousands of years ago. It's reality. It could happen at any time, anywhere. How many millions of people Hitler killed? According to statistics, it is said Stalin killed over 25 million people in his own country. Those people that he felt he couldn't control totally. If I can't control you by your independent will, then I will control you by standing before you as death. Hare Krishna. So here we find the trees. It was like an army of trees just invaded the earth and usurped everything, so everyone was starving. There was no food. So in a spirit of compassion to the innocent souls of the world, because trees have their place. Trees have a place. But they can't take everyone else's place. Yes, you have your place, but you can't take someone else's place. That's a crime. So can you imagine the power of these prachetas? There were just 10 of them. And from their mouths came fire and air. To such quantity that it started literally burning every tree on earth. It was devastation. Explains it was the same type of flames and air coming out of their mouth. Flames means fire. And the air was just blowing that fire to large, large distances. Hadivo. And Lord Brahma came, along with the presiding deity of the trees, and said, please, enough. Trees are also your prajas. They also deserve to be protected. They've learned their lesson. They will not usurp anymore. And thus the prachetas protected the rest of the trees with great honor, and at the same time, they arrange for agricultural fields to grow wonderful, wonderful vegetarian bhoga for the service of Vishnu, and which was to be transformed into prasad for the welfare of all the world. Now this story Maitreya Rishi is telling to Vidura. And what Prabhupada so beautifully brings out in the purport is Maitreya is addressing Vidura as Rajan. Rajan means a great king. Vidura, king? He was never a king. We know the story of Vidura's life. His father was Vyasadeva, who was a Brahmin living at Badrigashram, where Govinda Prabhu, Gaur Gopal Prabhu, and Radha Gopinath Prabhu, they just gave nice seminars in Badrigashram. Bunky Bihariji and his family arranged like that. So Vyasadeva is Brahman in avatar in Badrigashram. But because Vidura was born of a mother who was a maid servant, he had no rights to the royalty of the Kuru Empire. Even though he was the most qualified person, he was considered son of a Sudra. Sudrani.
So here he is, just living in a very simple situation in Hastinapur. Never was a king, had no rights to ever be a king, but he was honest. Oh, he was so honest. He would just, what was in his heart, he spoke. And when he saw the crimes committed against the Pandavas, he said to Dhritarashtra, "You are my brother, and out of love for you, I must tell you what is the truth. Don't you see? You are going to be destroyed. You are going to be the cause of the destruction of our entire dynasty because you are too much attached, materially attached, to your son Duryodhana, who is an envious person, who is offense personified." Now Duryodhana heard him speak this. He said it right in the presence of Duryodhana. That's pretty brave. Very brave person. Can you imagine telling Dhritarashtra right in the presence of Duryodhana words like that? Well, Duryodhana became angry as fire, but his anger was born out of frustrated false ego. If you speak anything or do anything in that state of anger, all you could do is make offenses and become a criminal in the laws of karma. So he kicked Vidura out, and he had nothing. Now he's considered a Sudra by birth, and he's also lost everything. He's lost his home, he's lost his family, he's just wandering with no possessions in the forests for years. And here he's sitting at Haridwar, on the banks of Ganga Devi with Maitreya Rishi. And Maitreya Rishi's telling him all these beautiful histories. And he addresses him as Great King Rajan. Now it makes sense when Parikshit Maharaj or Yudhisthira Maharaj, but have you ever heard Vidura Maharaj? Why is he calling him a king? Because Prabhupada is explaining here, in the true sense, a king is a person who has actually taken the responsibility of controlling his empire on behalf of God. Yes? Well, this body and mind is our empire. And it's more difficult to control than the whole world. Confirmed. We see, many people, they can control states, they can control countries. Hiranyakashipu was controlling planets. But it was impossible for him to control his mind and senses. So the only real conquest is when we conquer our mind and senses. Tani saravani samyamyamuk yukta asitamatpara vasehi asyantriyanitasya pragya pratishtata. By restraining the senses from their objects, both gross and subtle, and fixing our consciousness on Krishna. That is real conquest. That is victory. Everything else is irrelevant to the truth. You could conquer nations, but it's no big deal. You're going to lose it all anyway. But if you could control your mind and senses, and especially if you can control your false ego, then you are a king. Prabhupada explains, one who can control the mind and senses is addressed as Swami or Goswami. Swami means master.
Goswami means master of the senses, including the sixth sense, the mind. And we find within the Vedic civilization that this was considered greatness. We do not find Atri Muni, Bhardraj Muni, Narada Muni, Gautam Muni. We never see them bowing their heads before the kings of the world. But we'll find all the good kings of the world bow their heads at the feet of the sages. Yes? Vishwamitra Muni. He renounced all kingdom and became a Brahmin living in forest. But when he came to Ayodhya, Dasarath Maharaj bowed to him, put him on his throne and worshipped him. Even Krishna was taking the role of Dwarkadish, the king of Dwarka, and when Sudama Vipra came, Krishna put him on his throne and worshipped him, served him with great care and attention. King Prataparudra, he was bowing at the feet of all the Vaishnavas, worshipping them, serving them. So this is a real king. A person who has control over the mind and the senses. And Vidura, because he was Krishna conscious, because he offered his mind, his senses, his life, his soul, his everything in the loving service of the Lord and his devotees. Therefore, he is being addressed as the true Rajan or king. So as devotees, we should see in terms of substance rather than just external maya that the world sees through. The world gives great respect and adoration to one who has money power, speaking power, mental power, political power. Yes, bow down. The world respects that. But a devotee understands where the power of God is actually manifesting. We take seriously and we respect where there's self-control, where there's sacrifice for the higher purpose, and where there's humility, compassion, absorption in Krishna. Where we see that, we understand this is the power of God. The power of God's love flows in this, through this venue. And this is what we respect. Yes, Maitreya Rishi is offering very, very high respects to Vidura because he saw the humility, the detachment, and the devotion of his heart. That is the real king. And to the degree the world learns to honor and respect these qualities, the world will be enlightened. And the world will be a happy place. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki Govinda Prabhu.
Raj, you are discussing about the being well-wisher. We see that sometime when we are, even though we know the philosophy, we are acting as the agents of Guru and Krishna. We know that ultimately Krishna is the ever well-wisher. Guru is the ever well-wisher. Even though philosophically we know that, but still sometime when we see that the object of our well-wishing, you know, when he drips away from us and takes somebody else's shelter, we become angry and upset. We are first hurt, that's okay, but we become angry and kind of ostracized him in our sangha. So how do you overcome this anartha?
Has that person taken lifelong vows before you?
No way. Yes, no. No.
So what? Even if he does, the only... We are simply custodians for Krishna, trying to help devotees. And the ego that I am the deliverer is an illusion. Yes? We should simply be happy that a person's becoming Krishna conscious. Whether they're taking shelter of you or someone else, the real thing is if you're really a well-wisher, you'll be happy that they're becoming Krishna conscious. Does that address what you're speaking? Be more specific.
If some counselee changes counselor, then counselor becomes angry.
That's quite specific. You don't have to be that specific. And please do not be more specific than that. A counselor is a servant. A counselor is not a master or a proprietor or a controller. A counselor is a service. Huh? We have absolutely no proprietorship or claim of control or monopoly over any counselee. If we think we have that, then there's something wrong that has to be corrected. The reason a person accepts a counselor is because they're inspired by somebody. If they're inspired by somebody else, we should, yes, very nice. As long as it's done in a respectable and proper way. If it's done just in a whimsical way, then that's not good for the person. But if it goes through the proper channels, with proper integrity, we should be very happy. Doesn't matter whether they're taking shelter of me or him or her or somebody else like that. We're all the same family. We're all the same temple. We're all the same movement. Yes? We should just be happy that people are becoming Krishna conscious. The whole principle, if the counselor system loses this spirit, it will become a monster. Counselors are not controllers. Counselors are not proprietors. Counselors are humble servants, giving their hearts and souls to try to help people who are coming to them for help. If someone wants to come to someone else, you should give all blessings. Does that answer your question? Is that specific enough? But at the same time, counselees should be mature enough to be respectful and honor. They shouldn't just be whimsical and just jumping here, there, and everywhere. But no. A counselor has no domain that he's controlling over. A counselor's just serving those who, through the gracious arrangement of the temple, they're serving those who are coming before them and helping them to understand what is pure, unalloyed devotional service. That is the function. and the reciprocation of gratitude, you know, is just the natural. It has to come naturally. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, you were mentioning in the lecture about prestige, how it is abominable. But for most, many of us who are working in, you know, in corporate life, prestige is practically all important, in sense that if you don't really, I'm not saying search for prestige or, you know, get it, but if you're not prestigious, then someone is going to, you know, step on you and push you down. If you're not gathering prestige in some manner or the other, you tend to get stepped upon. So it's very contrary to what ideals we follow in spiritual life, and to some extent this is a struggle for us when we are working, because if we are humble, not humble, but if we are just normal, if we don't really go aggressively forward, somebody is going to step on you. So how do we handle such situations?
So you like to step on others?
Not exactly stepping, but it's like this. If you are, I'm not saying that we are humble in office. We may be just normal.
Everyone knows what you're saying. Humility does not mean weakness. Humility is strength. It's the ultimate strength. If we're actually humble in the proper spirit, then the power of God is with us. So yes, not only business, even in preaching. Prabhupada says, if a sannyasi loses his reputation, he has no service, he can't preach. Who's going to listen to you? Right? But it's not done in an egoistic way. We want prestige for our society as devotees. Don't we want ISKCON to have prestige? Don't we want our spiritual master to have prestige? Don't we want Krishna to have prestige? Yes, but we don't want anything for our own selfish desire. So if you are representing, a society of devotees, then prestige toward you is prestige toward what you represent. But we should always be conscious of that. Whatever prestige we're trying to get is not for my own benefit. It's not for my own aggrandizement. It's not for my own positioning. I'm simply representing and trying to, through my behavior, I'm trying to give prestige, honor to Krishna and Krishna's society. Yes? So in business, people are very eager for prestige, but as soon as that prestige becomes selfish and egoistic, it will just drag you down through the lower modes of nature, passion and ignorance, definitely. It's the dung of a boar. Yes? Just like Prabhupada explains that attachment to gold, right? Gold is the symbol of wealth, power, and prestige. Correct? That's why Parikshit Maharaj told Kali that you can be the ruler wherever there is greed for gold. Gold means power, wealth, prestige. And it facilitates every other type of sense gratification. Now Prabhupada says that for a devotee, what is gold? We're keeping consistent to the topic. It is yellow stool. Now, we all know there's different color stools according to various circumstances. But yellow stool, bright yellow stool, is the result of one who has jaundice. Yes? So it's disease stool, yellow stool. So Prabhupada said for a Vaishnav, attachment to gold is like attachment to disease, jaundice infected stool.
Hare Krishna.
This is quite radical. What does that mean? Wealth, prestige, and power, which facilitates all other forms of sense gratification. The whole world is mad after it. But to a devotee, it is diseased stool, abominable. So I remember someone once asked a devotee, then why you put gold on the deities? Huh? Why are you putting yellow stool on the deities? When you offer to the deities, it's not yellow stool. When you offer it to Krishna, or when you offer it to Krishna's service, it becomes something millions of times more valuable than gold. Just like at one time, there were no Tulsi beads. So for initiation, they just used some regular wood beads, and Prabhupada chanted on them and gave. And because the spiritual master has chanted and you're chanting Hare Krishna, he said this wood is as good as Tulsi. It's non-different. Yes? Similarly, when you put even ordinary metal or plastic jewelry on the deities, it becomes millions and millions of times spiritually more valuable than diamonds and rubies and emeralds and lapis lazulis and all of these other precious gems. It becomes like Chintamani. Yes? So we want to offer whatever. We want to offer the best to Krishna. We want to offer the best for Krishna. So when you offer gold to Krishna, which means when you offer wealth to Krishna, when you offer power to Krishna, when you offer prestige to Krishna, it transforms into Chintamani, spiritual energy, which can illuminate the world. But as soon as we take that same thing, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, if we seek the same thing, the wealth, the prestige, and all of that of the world for ourselves, it becomes diseased, jaundice-ridden stool. It becomes abominable. So don't think yourself the doer. Understand that if the prestige, if getting prestige helps you in your service to Krishna, helps you to maintain your family in Krishna's service, helps you to to do something wonderful with your profits for Krishna's cause, for the welfare of uplifting people, yes, then we should try for that prestige. But as soon as we become attached to it for ourselves, we're fallen, we're contaminated, and it becomes a very, very big obstacle. Yes? Srila Prabhupada was at one time in pharmaceutical, and you see some of his advertisements. day's liniment, and he talks about all the benefits and all the glories of day's liniment. People would buy it, and he would use the money to fund the temple here in Bombay, Gaudiya Math, to serve his guru, to give prasad to his family. Yes, he was using it in Krishna's service. So in order to do that in the world, you have to glorify your product. And sometimes you have to glorify the person who's making the product, but you shouldn't take it seriously. Krishna's the doer. Krishna's the intelligency of the intelligence, the ability in man, the strength of the strong. We should humble ourselves in that way. Does that answer your question? So yes, business is karmically very, very, very entangling because you have to do this kind of things. Therefore, we have to be very careful to contribute from what we're making in the business for the highest cause, to neutralize that karma. That is scientific reality. It's not a fundraising technique. It's just a fact that if you do business, you are being incriminated because of all this prestige and all the other things you're doing. And this is the recommendation of Lord Chaitanya and the recommendation of the Holy Scriptures. Unless you give in proper charity to the right place, the right time, the right way, unless you give that charity, then you're going to be karmically infected and contaminated by your business activities. But charity is the way to neutralize that. So it's spoken for the good of the giver. Yes? And also, we have to be very, very careful to hear Srimad Bhagavatam on a regular basis so that we actually know what's really happening and we keep the right disposition of mind and we don't become caught up in it. That's the tendency. We're doing all this external stuff because we have to live in this world and to do some service, but we shouldn't get caught up. Our consciousness shouldn't identify with this. That means we need a very strong spiritual base. We need good association. We have to come to class and hear how, you know, all about this boar stool and this jaundice stool. We have to hear about how actually I'm in Maya. If a person's really alert in class, then the person's not thinking, oh, who's he talking about? I know, he's talking about my competitor. Definitely, I hope that person's listening to this class. In fact, if he's not here in the temple, I'll send a tape to him. We should think, it's about me, I'm in Maya. I need to hear these things. I need to be on guard at all time. So if we have nice association and we have nice sadhana and we're charitable, then we can be like lotus flowers. Even in a dirty, filthy, muddy pond of water, we could be pure. Beautiful offering to Krishna, our hearts. In this spirit, we must really take shelter of the chanting of the holy name. Thank you.